Those old elections where you had a Republican who was always going to win in a Republican district versus a sacrificial lamb Democrat, you might feel better for 5 seconds if you're a Democrat checking the box sacrificial lamb, but you didn't really have any power.
Hi, I'm Zach Weissmuller for Reason TV, here with Jason Olson, director of IndependentVoice.org, an association of independent voters devoted to electoral reform in California. He recently co-authored a study on California's top two primary system called A Quiet Revolution. Jason, thank you very much for talking to us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's start with the basics. Mm-hmm. What is a top two primary system? How is it different than how most states run their primaries?
The top two system's actually pretty simple. In most states, you know, the Democrats, Republicans, and whoever else, they get to have a particular candidate on the ballot. And in order to participate and select that candidate, you typically have to be of that political party. Unfortunately, that locks out independent voters, that locks out all kinds of different folks, particularly when you take into account gerrymandering of districts so that most districts are one party. The difference is under the top two nonpartisan primary, all the candidates just run on the same ballot. All the voters can just vote for whoever they want, and then the top two vote getters go on to a runoff style election in the fall. So really it returns the political power and the power to run the elections. It takes it away from the parties and turns it over to voters.
So the title of the study is A Quiet Revolution. Why has this reform been revolutionary?
The most obvious effect to most people is that California's governing again. We're no longer stuck in partisan dysfunction of government shutdowns and budget crises. The legislature is actually functioning together once again. It's a very different environment. And that's because our elections are competitive now in California.
So when people think about competitiveness in elections, mm-hmm. they might think, oh, there's a lot more candidates to choose from, a lot of different parties we can choose from. But the practical effect of this has been a lot of single party races, two Democrats running right. against each other in a Democrat district, two Republicans running against each other in a Republican gerrymandered district.
Yeah.
How is that more competitive than when you actually had at least some competition between a Republican and a Democrat?
We've been led to believe over the years that what competition means is one Democrat and one Republican in the fall. The challenge is that most districts have become single party districts. Whether because they're gerrymandered or because of a long-term demographic shift. Those old elections where, you had a Republican who was always going to win in a Republican district versus a sacrificial lamb Democrat, you might feel better for 5 seconds if you're a Democrat checking the box sacrificial lamb, but you didn't really have any power, and there was really no reason for that Republican to come knocking on your door or talk to you. Now contrast that to the current system, where, yes, in a Republican-dominated district, if I'm a Democrat, I'm going to probably get two Republicans in the fall. But rather than just running to their base, they can't do that. They're going to split their base. So now both Republicans have to go out and figure out, how do I get enough independent voters? How do I get enough Democrats? How do I get enough third party voters to put together the kind of electoral coalition that's actually going to win? And that's actually empowered all voters and made the elections much, much more competitive in these formerly one party districts.
So when you talk about competitiveness, you're talking about margin of victory and kind of turnover, incumbents getting kicked out of office
right.
and so forth, right? What kind of numbers did you see there specifically to delve into it a little bit deeper?
Elections in California previously, they were one of the least competitive in the country. Virtually a 100% incumbent reelection rate. That means I was already in the legislature or Congress and I could run for another term, I was virtually guaranteed to get that seat under the old partisan system. What we found in 2012 and 2014 was that 14 incumbents lost their seats. Seven of them lost their seats to people from the same party in one of these same party races. The other thing that we found is that California's elections went from one of the least competitive in the country to the most competitive between 2012 and 2014.
When you look at the district races across California, is there a case study that really exemplifies what top two has accomplished?
Mark Levine versus Michael Allen. Now, both of these are Democrats, and they're in Marin County, which is a heavily Democratic district, right? Now, in the past, Michael Allen, who was actually moved into the district, he was an incumbent, he was moved in from another district in order to secure the seat. Mark Levine, who was a San Rafael city councilman, decided to run against him and represent the people who were actually in the district. He wasn't a carpetbagger being moved in. So you had this really interesting race there where Michael Allen, with huge support from the Democratic Party establishment, placed number one, and Mark Levine placed number two. So then we got to the general election. Mark Levine reached out to all voters. He reached out to Republicans, he reached out to independents, he reached out to Democrats. Michael Allen ran a really partisan campaign. In fact, they started to smear Levine as not a real Democrat because he was actually talking to Republicans and he was talking to independents. Oh my gosh, you know, terrible, terrible thing. Well, it turns out Mark Levine ended up winning that race. So he defeated an incumbent with the full backing of his political party as an insurgent candidate in a general election in which all voters were allowed to participate, and he did so by reaching out to all voters. So that, to me, is what Top 2 is absolutely all about. It's no longer appealing to a very narrow segment of your base and taking a vacation during the general election because you're in a gerrymandered district and you don't have to do anything. It's about competing for all votes and empowering voters.
Is this kind of caving to the idea that we're gonna have gerrymandered districts, we're gonna have all these single party districts, there's no hope of any sort of inter-party competition in the future, so the best we can do is kind of optimize intra-party competition?
Yeah, I wouldn't phrase it that way. In fact, I and other independents across the country are really excited about maybe moving to a phase of governance that goes beyond party, right? Where we leave the trappings of this kind of like very stolid Republican on this side, Democrat on this side, and that's how every issue gets framed, towards something that's much more open and inclusive of everybody.
So is the long game that you see this as actually undermining the power of the major parties? And if so, how would that work?
Yeah, I don't think any of us are calling for the elimination of political parties. But I think what we see is that the political parties have literally taken away the voters' right to run our own government. What this is really about in terms of the long game is about the voters and the citizens of the country taking back our government from the control of the political parties.
And what about third parties? How do they fit into the scheme, if at all? Are they totally locked out now?
I have a long history in third parties. I was in the Reform Party in the 1990s and early 2000s. Third party voters have a lot more power under the current system. The third parties themselves continue to play a, I'm gonna take my ball and go home, strategy rather than engaging what they could do. For instance, if their candidates didn't make it to the second round, they could get together and go to the candidates and say, look, we've got 7,000 registered voters in your district and it's two Democrats running and we're from the Green Party and these are the top three issues in the Green Party. So where do you guys stand on our actual issues? Because we're going to make an endorsement and our votes actually matter now. So they could leverage that power and actually have real impact on public policy debate rather than just running a candidate that's going to get 2 or 3% of the vote.
From a libertarian perspective, mm-hmm. when we hear that, you know, there's less partisan bickering, more mm-hmm. legislative action, it actually kind of sends chills down our spines
sure.
from time to time because we think, oh, that means more spending, more bad bills being passed. Are there any bright spots for people who want to reduce the size and scope of government when it comes to the top two reform?
Absolutely. Small L libertarians, right, who often end up voting for Republican candidates because there's often not a Libertarian Party candidate running in their district. I think that there's a lot of benefits, particularly for those kinds of folks out there. So under the new system, particularly in a district that's dominated by Republicans, again, the libertarians could go to both Republican candidates and say, listen, you actually need our votes this time. Guess what? We've got a list of demands. Here's the top three issues of libertarians in this district. We're gonna be making an endorsement of one of the candidates. Where do you guys stand on our issues? And then when that Republican gets elected with that coalition that includes libertarian voters, or a Democrat from a two Democrat district gets elected with voters from that libertarian coalition, now they're on record. They say, this is what we're gonna work on. And if they come back the next time looking for your vote and they've done nothing, you actually have the power to get rid of them, which is something you didn't have under the old system.
Jason Olson, thank you very much for talking to us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, appreciate it.
For Reason TV, I'm Zach Weissmuller.